Welcome to the Michael U Podcast. We have a very special guest today, and the office is being destroyed. Nomi Malik from our office. So, Nomi Malik is an award-winning real estate agent here in Vancouver, BC, and we just had some whiteboards falling down. So thank you for saving that, Nomi.
My pleasure.
Yeah, he's not only a good realtor, but he's also has lightning quick reflexes because a whiteboard just almost fell on his head. So Nomi, I just love to, why don't you get started? Why don't you share the story of how you got started in real estate?
Yeah, no, I can do that. Thanks for having me on the show. I've been listening to I've listened to most of them.
Oh, cool. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So you've had some pretty cool guests on the
awesome.
Show. So yeah. I'm honored.
Well, I'm very thankful to have you here. And yeah, just please go ahead.
Yeah. So you introduced me as an award-winning realtor. I got an award for my beard and my hair. I think that's about it. There's nothing special
about
me.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful beard and a beautiful head of long, flowy hair. So <yeah. laughs> this isn't videoed otherwise.
That's funny. Yeah. Okay, so you want me to introduce myself? Do you want me to talk about me when I started in real estate?
Yeah, just maybe the start of your career.
Okay, sure. So interesting enough, I started investing in real estate when I was in my 20s. So I'd say around when I was 24. I'm talking about 2003, when you could actually go down and sign a pre-sale with no deposit and no money. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, I remember the days of lineups. And
yeah, exactly. Things. So yeah. It was like the city of Vancouver is really pushing for people to get into housing. So I didn't understand how it worked. I didn't believe it. First of all, I didn't have any money. So I was like, how does this even work? And my mentor at the time was like, don't worry about it. You know, this is going to close in a couple of years. And by that time, you'll probably be able to flip it and make a little bit of cash. So that was my first venture into anything real estate related. And I ended up selling that. I didn't sell that pre-sale. I closed on it. Right. And it was in Burnaby. I lived in downtown Vancouver at the time. So Burnaby to me was like Abbotsford. I'm like Burnaby, I know there's a metro town.
Metro town. And, that's
we usually go there to shop.
Silver City.
Yeah, so I bought my first pre-sale. There was a 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom, right across from the SkyTrain station there. Which one is it? It's on Dawson. The tandem.
I bought.
And they were like, oh, there's gonna be a Starbucks across the street, yeah, and like a SkyTrain. I was like, sure, whatever. So I rented that out, and I remember I paid $269 for that place. 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 850 square feet.
Wow.
2003.
Yeah.
and I sold it for like within a year and made like good money on it. So after I did that, I was like, okay, wow, this is great. I'll do more of these. So I did that a couple times. And then my dad came up to me and he was like, you know, we have this opportunity where we can buy a couple of building lots and build houses on them.
Right.
I'm like, okay, great. Well, I don't know anything about that. How would we? My dad didn't know either. My dad is just an entrepreneur. He ran he's done restaurants. He's done leather stores. He's done all sorts of stuff. And he's like, we'll just have to learn it. So my dad basically said, all these lots are not actually in Vancouver. They're out in an area called Langley. And I'm like, okay, great. What do we know about Langley? He's like, nothing. I'm like, okay, great. I live in Gastown, so how is this going to work? So he said, if you're going to invest in this with me, you're going to have to move out to Langley and help me manage these projects. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. All right, so...
Urban, suburban,
man. So the area out in Langley, actually, it's more Cloverdale, that area. So I'm talking around 2007. So we picked up a few lots. We built 3 houses on those properties. I moved out that way. It was really different. I didn't have any friends out there.
Yeah.
So I got a lot of work done. Because that's all there was to do, was just work. Like, I'd literally stand on site and I'm like, what are we doing today? He's like, well, you're gonna count the trucks that are coming in and bringing in the dirt.
Right.
Hey, because these guys will rip me off if you don't pay attention to how many loads coming in and out. So I was like, okay, great. Those houses took about a year and change to build. So I took up the hobby of day trading at that time. It was just so boring, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'd just sit around. Like, some days there would be nothing to do, right? So I had a cousin of mine who was like, oh, you should trade stocks during the day. It's really easy.
Yeah.
And this was before the crash. in 2008. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh,
Were you trading? Oh, you were doing stuff? Okay, great. So, you know, for those who didn't know, like, that whole meltdown was, it was horrible if you were in the market at that time. So leading up to it, I was doing awesome. I'd, like, wake up at, like, 4:30, get my plan ready. I'd make a couple trades. I'd make a few thousand bucks. And I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And I'll be really happy.
True, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd go to work, and I'd be like, great. I get to count, like, dump trucks that come and go, and I've already made my money for the day.
Yeah.
So I was learning a lot at the time. So I was 30. I think I was just 30 years old at the time. So I was trading. I was doing well. I was like, oh, great. We're building houses. I'm the man. Like,
yeah.
This is awesome. Like, this is great. And then the market crashed. And when the market crashed, I remember we were probably about 3 months out from completion.
Mm-hmm.
So my financial portfolio was having a meltdown.
Right.
My dad was like, oh my God, like, look what's going on in the States.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's going to affect the housing market here. And this was our first project, right? So it was, we learned a lot about ourselves during that time, right? So I left trading at the time because I had a mentor for my day trading as well. I always find someone who knows what they're doing, and then I just latch onto them, and I'm just, you know, I sort of just take their advice. So he kind of, my mentor for trading basically said, Nomi, we've never seen anything like this before. I'd highly recommend you pull your money out of the market.
Right.
And just not trade right now because you're too much of an amateur, right? So I'm like, that's great. I took a crazy hit on my portfolio, but then I'm like, okay, great. Now we have these houses. Are they going to sell?
Right.
Right. And luckily enough, I think our market just went quiet for 6 months.
Yeah.
Right. So when we completed it, it didn't take more than a couple months to sell the houses at a good price too. Right?
Yeah.
So we were like really lucky. We were very blessed. And during that time we hired, I wasn't licensed.
Okay.
So we hired local realtors to sell it. And my dad was in charge of that. And these guys that my dad was hiring were like, terrible.
Okay.
They'd put a sign up and that was it. Like, they would take photos with their digital cameras.
Yeah, their small digital cameras.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So I'm like, Dad, these guys are garbage. And because I was partners with my father, I was paying half for everything.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, wow. That was the first time I realized how much realtors make.
Mm-hmm.
I had all the property I'd sold in the past with my family realtor.
Yeah.
I had no clue.
Right.
It was just our family realtor. I'm like, okay, great, sure, whatever.
Right.
So basically, I'm like, you know what? This is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're paying them too much to do this work. I didn't seem like they're doing any work.
Right. So you didn't see the value there.
Exactly. So anybody listening to this podcast right now, if you don't know the culture of the Fraser Valley area, so agents don't show houses there.
Hmm.
It's all a lockbox culture, right?
Right.
Which in hindsight, I think is very efficient now that I've been in the business for 10 years. But I was like, they don't, like, they just put a box on the door and there's keys in it and then other realtors come and show it. And he's like, yeah, that's about it. So my dad's like, okay, why don't you go get your license then? You know, Mr. Big Shot, why don't you, like, do something about it, right?
Right.
Because you save the money and keep it in the family, right? So
yeah.
I was like, all right, great. So I studied, I got my license. Big up to Fred at Get Fred. He helped me pass my exam. So thank you so much for that. And after that, he gave me some advice. And then I joined Sun West Coast Realty,
right
out in Langley.
Oh, in Langley, okay.
So it was actually a really nice office. It was really like, oh wow, this is really nice and whatnot.
Were you still living in Langley?
Living in Langley because we finished these three houses, and I sort of tasted the success of that, and I was just like, okay, great, like, let's do this again. But I'm like, you know, it's gonna take at least a year and a half to build the next project.
Right.
So what do I do in the meantime?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And my dad's like, do what you do, man. Go out and meet people and, you know, tell them, you know a little bit about real estate, which I think I did. I knew a lot about how it worked. I had no idea how to build a business as a realtor.
Right.
So my first year in real estate, I had no idea that I had to go out and, like, ask people for business.
Okay.
I would just tell people, here's my card. I'm a realtor now. They're like, no, but what do you mean? Don't you, like, build houses? I'm like, no, we do that too.
Right.
So there was, like, a lot of confusion with people.
Because,
like, oh, you're a realtor now? Oh, okay. Is everything all right? No,
yeah.
Is the housing market not going well?
But
no, everything's great. So that first year I grossed $54,000.
Right.
Pre-tax.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like to me, I was just like, this is like poverty, like, how do I survive on this, right? And my wife's like, she sat me down and she goes, this is how you have to make the business work. No, you actually have to leave the house and right. go meet strangers. Like, you yeah. have to go meet friends to introduce you to people and be like, I'm a realtor.
Right.
My personality is probably like a lot of people's personality. It's awkward, right?
Right.
You're like, oh, hi, I'm a realtor. Do you need help?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I can help you. Call
yeah.
me. I didn't know how to do that.
Okay.
At all. I was...
So no sales background prior to...
Well, not technically in that yeah. aspect where I'm literally asking for the sale.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm asking for the business.
Right.
I mean, I could talk all day long with someone about real estate,
mm-hmm.
investing in it. What did I do?
Right.
This is how you do it. This is the kind of pre-sale you look for. Like,
yeah.
that, because that was organic.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how to do that because I knew how to do it for myself.
Right.
But convincing someone to say, hey, you know what? If you need to sell a property, you know, I'm your guy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was too proud.
Okay.
Yeah. So tip number one,
yeah.
realtors listing. Yeah, there's no pride in this
yeah,
business.
Yeah, don't be proud.
Yeah, just be sure.
Where do you think that pride proudness came from?
From success.
Yeah?
From success, not as in being arrogant, but in like, you know, I'm capable. Like, I don't really, like, if I'm talking to someone and they know I'm a realtor, they should be like, oh, he knows what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's built houses.
Yeah,
he's,
exactly.
you know, he's flipped condos. Like, the
mm-hmm.
guy, he's not an amateur, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because after year two finished, I made $57,000 again.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat back, I'm like, what's going on, man? And my wife's like, I don't know what to tell you, Naomi, but if you're just going to keep doing the same activity and expecting something different to happen.
Right.
Because my dad and people around me are like, oh, it takes time. It takes 5 years,
yeah.
right? You know, it takes 5 years. And I'm like, I'm going to go broke at this rate.
Right.
Right.
Because obviously there's a lot of costs in being an agent.
There are
yeah,
costs
yeah.
that a lot of people don't realize, especially
right.
our clients. Because they just see, they
right.
go to their notary or their lawyer and like, oh, wow, this
yeah.
person just made a, you know, a small fortune.
Mm-hmm.
No, there are costs involved. And they get higher and higher as I believe your business grows.
Right.
It's not like you just keep making more money and you
mm-hmm.
just, you save all the extra, right? So I just decided, you know what? I'm not from Langley. That's the problem. I didn't know. I didn't want to go out of my way to connect with the people out there. Not that there's anything wrong
mm-hmm.
with the people in Langley, but there's a vibe there, and either you're with that vibe in that community and you get it.
Right.
Just to put things in perspective, I kept and lived in one of the houses that we built.
Mm-hmm.
So my neighbors were absolutely baffled when they'd hear me say, "Oh, we're going into Vancouver to go eat dinner," and they're like, "Why are you doing that?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Just because there's so many cool restaurants." Then they're like, but don't you have to pay for parking there?
Yeah.
Like, that's the, like,
right.
it's a very, very mellow
yeah.
mentality. Like, I think at the time, 2010, the only place to go eat in Langley was Earl's.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to, like, Pizza Hut and stuff
right,
like that. But
right.
there wasn't really,
yeah.
right? And I spent, like, 10 years between Gastown and Yale Town. Like, so I sort
yeah.
of, that was...
That was the lifestyle you were used
way,
to.
In a way,
right?
But, you know, I enjoyed having those options
right.
there, right? So I told my wife, I don't know, I'm not feeling it. So she's like, what do you want to do? So I said, I don't know. Maybe we need to move back to Vancouver. She's like, okay, do we have to sell the house? Like, how is this going to work
right.
now? Are you sure you want to do that huge move? Because it doesn't seem like are you going to change your activities, Naomi? Like, that was
yeah.
her whole thing, right? She
right.
was being, she's being very realistic with
yeah.
me, right?
Logical.
She lives with me, so she knows me,
right?
right?
Yeah.
She knows the real me,
right?
So,
that's right.
So she's like, oh, think about it. And I said, you know what? Let's just do it. So just went on Craigslist and I said, I'm not going to sell the house because that's going to take time. We'll
right.
just rent it out and we'll go rent somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I made another mistake, which was I'm going to go live where I want to sell.
Yeah.
So I moved to a really nice place, like a nice neighborhood on the west side. And I'm like, I'm going to sell these kind of houses because, you know, I know how to talk to these kind of people.
Right.
Right. Yeah, no, that's not how you pick an area to sort of figure out how to do things, in my experience anyways,
yeah.
right? So I moved to the Sutton office here on Cambie and 57.
Right.
Which was a smooth transition. And there was a big difference in my attitude this time because I kind of almost announced it to everybody that I'm moving to Vancouver for the purpose of real estate. So I would go to bed thinking, oh, like, everyone's now expecting fireworks, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's so fussy, he didn't want to be in Langley.
Right.
And I quadrupled my income that year.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, the biggest thing that I did differently was I went out and I met people.
Okay.
Bottom line.
Right.
I went out and I met people. I connected with a lot of the guys and girls that I grew up with, and I was actually just trying to get in front of their parents. Because right. none of my age had money.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not the kind of money. I mean, now we're talking 2013.
Yeah.
Where it's like really expensive to buy real estate. And I think the cheapest house in my area was like $2 million.
Right.
And most of them were owned by Asian people who don't speak English.
Yeah.
So I couldn't really connect with my neighbors. Mm-hmm. So I had to go out there and be like, okay, hey, I'm back in Vancouver. Like, oh, okay, great, right on. So I just slowly started networking with a lot of my friends' dads.
Okay. The next generation above you.
And I'm Pakistani, so I mean I kind of work the whole uncle auntie sort of circuit, right? Where I'm like, hey, you know, uncle, I'm a realtor, and you should use me. And every conversation was great. What kind of deal are you gonna give me? Because I got like three realtors that I can use, right? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what that means. I found out real quickly. Everybody just wants to never pay you full commission. So I bit the bullet on one or two deals, but those one or two deals were big deals. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I'd like had a $2 million listing.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, can I sell a $2 million house? Yeah. I sold it just like I sold a $200,000 condo.
Right.
So that transition back to Vancouver made me feel like this is where I need to be. Mm-hmm. I think you've probably had a lot of realtors feel that way, or like.
I think a lot of the times when you put an announcement out there, and you kind of give yourself somewhat of a kind of an accountability, you know. Obviously, when you announce that, oh, I'm moving back to Vancouver for the sole purpose of doing real estate, I'm sure that had sparked something within you to be able to quadruple your income.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And so when I hit that the end of that year, you know. They like called me and said, "Oh, we're gonna come to the awards show. We're gonna give you an award." And I'm just like, "I'm a little bit shy that way. I don't really like getting awards in front of people." So I remember I got my award in the mailbox or whatever. And I said to my wife, "Look, they gave me this award," and she's like, "This is incredible. You know, I told you this is what you had to do, and you know, you're doing it now." And I'm like, "Okay, cool." Then the next thing I did was I hired a coach. Mm. So I'm like, if I could do this on my own, if I get a coach, then I'm gonna like X this like who knows how many times, right? So I think it was Richard Robbins that I first looked into.
Right.
Didn't really. I met with someone and they kind of talked to me about Richard Robbins. Like, yeah, I don't know. But then I found another coach, who actually wasn't local. She was out of Ottawa.
Right.
Monster realtor out of Ottawa. Semi-retired. You know, a few hundred deals a year, and I just got a good vibe from her. And we'd have calls once a week.
Right.
It was costing me, I think, $5.99 a month for that 1 hour call.
Right.
Once a week, which at the time I was like, wow, that's like a lot of money. But it's okay. I'm gonna make this is an investment.
Yeah.
Right. And after 4 months of coaching, so the first thing I told her, look, I'm only gonna take coaching because I'm gonna tell you what I don't want to do.
Okay.
That's another mistake, guys. Yeah. I don't want to door knock. I don't want to cold call. Mm-hmm. Can you still coach me? And she's like, sure, of course I can.
Right.
What I didn't realize what she was doing was she was going to teach me how to stop saying no. Mm-hmm. Right. And after 4 months of not doing the things she was telling me to do, so she'd basically say, okay, this is what you're going to do, Nomi. You're going to change your mindset and you are going to door knock, but you're going to door knock with enthusiasm and you're going to let people know why people need to work with you.
Right.
And you're going to build, you're going to farm an area, and you know, we had this goal where I wanted every deal to bring me in like $20,000 worth of commissions. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I had done it a few times. I'm like, well, why am I not just focusing on this?
Yeah.
This makes sense. Right.
High yield.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. And I managed to pull it off. So I was just like, okay, great. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'll try it. I didn't like it. Cold calling. She didn't get me to cold call. She just got me to sort of do like partnered events with, like, let's say a mortgage specialist.
Right.
Like, put on an event at a bank and, you know, introduce yourself to people. And, you know, I'm like, what kind of event? She's like, I don't know. Halloween's around the corner. Why don't you do a Halloween event for the kids in the neighborhood?
Right.
And I'm like, sure. I didn't really know what to say or do, but I spent a lot of money on these events and nobody ever called me. So after 4 months of coaching, she's like, you're not really doing what I'm telling you to do. Do you think it makes sense for us to continue coaching? And that was such a relief to hear, because I wanted to fire her. Like, I didn't want to coach with her anymore, but she said it first. So I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not doing what you're telling me to do. And she's like, I'll tell you what, Nomi, you will eventually become very successful at what you do at the pace you're doing it, but then just understand that's the pace it'll be at. Because the things that I'm teaching you to do is to do it a lot quicker, right? Because it's if you meet a lot of high producers like yourself, you know it's numbers.
Right.
Just have the conversation over and over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. And I, at the time in my career, didn't believe that that was me.
Right.
I didn't want to be... I'm terrible at sales. Like, mm-hmm. just if you got me to sell something, I would be bad at it. Like, I'm just not, you know, here's a script, this is what you got to say, you got to get them to say yes three times, and then,
like,
you know...
Like a conventional sales approach.
Exactly,
the,
right?
The,
so I was just like, that's not me, so I hung up the phone. I remember telling my wife, I fired the coach, and she's like, why did you do that? Because I'm not doing anything she's telling me to do. And she's like, why not? And I'm like, because they suck. Like, I don't want to talk to, like... same mentality. What if I knock on the door and someone's having dinner?
Mm-hmm.
What if I'm bothering someone, right? I mean, there's not a salesperson walking around this earth that doesn't believe they're bothering someone, right?
Right.
I mean, that's just how it is. I mean, 10 years in, I still feel that before I force myself to pick up the phone.
Okay.
Right? So now I'm like, so that year, the second year back in Vancouver, I didn't do as well. I did all right. And then, you know, that... the new chapter in my life was Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember driving by 16th and Oak here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, what's this? Yeah. This used to be Blockbuster.
Right.
I used to like...
That's our building.
So the Oakland headquarters is right on Oak and 16th.
In Vancouver, yeah.
In Vancouver, yes.
Who knows? Maybe someone in China is listening to this.
Yeah, exactly. So
or India, I don't know.
Very fancy, very, you know, chic-looking building from the outside. And I'm like, wow, what is this place? I've never heard of this company before. Mm-hmm. I was on my way to the mosque, right? I'm Muslim, mm-hmm. so our mosque is right on West 8th and Asher, and I was like driving by. I'm like, I gotta stop and check this place out. So after I went to the mosque, on the way back, I walked in and I'm like, hi, I'm a realtor, and I just wanted to know more about this office.
Right.
And the front, I don't know who's working the front, but they're like, oh, great, okay, you should talk to Michael. And you happen to be right around the corner.
Right.
And of course, you know, and if anybody's ever met Michael, you'll know that Michael's got this, he's very energetic when he meets people. Do you know that? Like, you're a blast of energy. You're like, hey,
like a super soaker.
How's it going? Exactly, right? And it's just like, come on in. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that you know, you're here and talking with me. So I was like, wow, this guy is really different from
he's a strange bird.
Well, no, you're just very warm and friendly, which, you know, if you've been a realtor in the business long enough, and I don't know, maybe you've had the fortune of working at a brokerage where your managing broker is, you know, usually a little bit older,
right?
Usually male, and from that old school, you know, we're gonna sign you up right now, and you're gonna be a superstar, and you know, these are the things you're gonna do, and we got a great, like, all that stuff.
Right.
That wasn't you. And the way I knew it wasn't you is when I kind of told you about what was going on. I remember at the end of the meeting, I'm thinking to myself, this is a really nice office. You know mm-hmm. what? I'm looking for office space. I'm looking for more parking because, you know, those things are so important.
Yeah.
When you're trying to build your business.
Yeah.
All the things you think you need to do to be successful. And I remember what you said. You're like, okay, great. I'll let you know. And I was just, that confused me. I was like, oh, okay. Usually it's the other way around, right?
Right.
Offices just want to say, you know, come and join our office.
Right.
And you didn't do that. And I, you know, went home, I told my wife I stopped at this office, and she's like, why are you stopping at a new office? I'm like, no, there's a vibe about the office. And the truth is, and I didn't realize it subconsciously, is I'm drawn to this particular intersection because during that time in my 20s when I was buying and flipping condos, I lived down the street from here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was right on 16th and Canby.
Right.
So the neighborhood had a very positive memory.
Connotations,
It did. Right. It did. You know, I remember I was doing well, mm-hmm. and I'd walk from there to Blockbuster.
Right.
And, you know, I'd
rent Jurassic Park.
Exactly. I loved renting from here, you know. And so really good memories. So it was just something about the energy. And then I'm just like, you know what? I think I'm gonna join this office if they'll take me.
Right.
Right. And she's like, she said the exact same. What do you mean if they take you?
Yeah.
Like, it's a little different. I met the mm-hmm. owner there, and he's kind of not really into just hiring anybody, right, mm-hmm. or bring anybody on. So we met again, and I remember in our second meeting, you were like, "Great. So can you show me your business plan, Omi?" And I'm like, "I don't have one." And you're like, "Oh, okay, cool. Maybe we can, you know, if we decide." You told me, you know what? I think you'd be a good fit here. You seem like somebody I'd hire to sell my own house.
Right.
Right. So I think you'd be a great fit, and I think we have a lot to offer. And I'm like, "Okay, great." And that was December. We were having that conversation in December of 2014.
Right.
No, 2015.
14, 15.
Whatever it was. Anyways, I just remember I was taken off on a plane to Dubai like the next day, and I was just like, okay, great, I'll talk to you when I get back. And everything changed after that. Because I don't know if anybody listening has ever had an opportunity not just to change offices, but to actually meet someone who is very humble and quiet about their success and actually willing to share what they've learned and what's helped them become successful, whatever that means. I mean, it means success is different to everybody, but Michael was that person for me. So it ironically ended up taking office space right next door to you.
Yeah.
Or what, two offices? The two offices down. Ross is in the next office, right? Yeah, so I ended up being really in close proximity of Mike. And I remember the first thing he told me, he goes, you know me, the first piece of advice I'm going to give you is just, I'm going to suggest you smile more. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I remember that. He looked really offended. He frowned right away.
So I did the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, again, I go home and I'm like, sweetheart, let's ask my wife. I go, do I not smile enough? And she's like, why? Why are you asking me this? I go, you know, Michael today was telling me that I'm not approachable looking. Like, I should just, like, be more happy looking. And she's like, just listen to whatever Mike's telling you, just go with the flow. And that sort of just started my relationship with Oakwin and Michael. People ask me all the time, it happens to me all the time, oh, you're with Oakwin, how is it over there? And I'm very blunt. I tell them that I'm at Oakwin Realty because of Michael Yu. Oakwin's got all these amazing qualities to it, right? And everybody seeks something different,
right?
So a lot of realtors here, they come here for the community, they come here for the collaboration, they come here for whatever reason draws them here. But I know that whatever anchors them here is strong enough to sort of help them in their quest to achieve whatever.
I like that quest.
They're trying to do. Yeah,
very D&D.
To go on even about that, it's learning how to slay the dragons in your life,
right?
And it's personal or business. That's happened on multiple levels for me here because of my friendship with you.
Oh, wow! I don't know what to say.
Thank you. You're a very special person in my life. And a lot of people are like, oh, who's Michael? I'm like, Michael's one of the owners at Oakwin, and he's a gem, and he's a gift. And people are like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, here's Michael's number. Go meet him, right? I don't know how many people ended up calling you and meeting with you. Coming here opened up, you read books, right?
You're a
big reader, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you just read articles on your phone, perspective seems to come up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Just pivot and change your perspective on things, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, like, why was I not looking at it like this before?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm sure that's happened throughout your
absolutely,
your career,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
So
you can look at the same person or the same situation, and that person can be ugly or beautiful, or that situation can be the best thing in life or the worst thing in life.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's the same exact situation, which is
pretty
cool.
So for me, Michael literally opened up the windows to the same business, just with a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the things you were asking me, and I would love to spend as much time as possible talking about what has helped me pivot and taken my business to the next level.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that.
Yeah,
for sure.
But ultimately, I've been here, it's been 3 years now, and all these lessons that I've taken, I mean, we meet for breakfast at least once or twice a year, or, we talk when I need to chat with you about things. And it's helped drive my business to the sky, right? I mean, there's been some, obviously, bumps in the road, which is normal. Because I don't always listen to everything you tell me.
Oh, it's not always that.
All right.
But every great journey has to have some pebbles.
Exactly, right? It's never a straight line.
Yeah.
Right? It would be nice if it was. And this is year 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's year 4 with Oakwin.
Right.
And if I actually think about it, I really believe that even though this is year 10 as a licensed agent, I believe my path started, like, properly when I moved back to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So really, like, end of 2013.
Right, so the last 5 years.
Then. I think so.
Yeah.
I would say more so, where it was like, now there's actual, like, waking up and being intentional about everything. Not just kind of And I think a lot of realtors go through this where there's so much downtime when you don't have anybody to talk to. Clients, I mean.
Right.
Like, what am I supposed to be doing right now? I had that conversation with you.
Yeah.
Right? I remember when you told me, okay, Nomi, you're at a point in your career where it's time to get an assistant. I'm like, how do we know that?
Yeah. And
like, how much are you making? I'm like, making this one. Great, it's time for an assistant. I'm like, okay.
Right.
And I remember the scariest thing was obviously realizing how much that was going to cost. And like any business person, you're like, oh my God, that's like, why would I pay someone that much money to do
right.
I can do that.
Right? Yeah.
And you're like, no, you have to prospect, right? So I remember right after I hired an assistant, I think within a week, I took a meeting with him, like, hey, Mike, what am I supposed to be doing? There's nothing to do now.
Right.
There's no excuse, right?
Yeah.
I'm not doing data input. I'm not booking the photographer.
Right. You're not answering.
I'm not doing showings,
calls.
Man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm like, dude, who are you talking to, right? And you're
right.
Like, this is what you told me, verbatim. You know, Nomi, you don't have to work all the time. You're like, why don't you read a book? Why don't you take a nap? Well, why don't you just be fresh? Because when the phone does ring, or when you do get that opportunity to speak to someone, you're ready. Like, you know what to say, you know what to do. There's no distractions, right? That was difficult for me, because I remember leaving that meeting going, I don't want to read a book right now, I want to work.
Right.
And again, lessons, right? Because you're like, just because you're ready doesn't mean the universe is ready for you to do something, right? So, I feel like I've been talking nonstop.
Oh, no, this is really good. No, please continue, yeah.
That's where I'm at as far as just career-wise.
Right.
What else do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, I'm curious because, you know, you touched on so many different notes, and I think, you know, something that I, you know, just, you know, you have this kind of go for it attitude, you know, like you basically, oh, why don't you be a realtor? Okay, I'll be a realtor. Why don't you help me build this house? Sure, I'll build the house. And like, where did this kind of this yes mindset or this kind of like, what do you think the root of that is? A willingness to be able to maybe jump into a bit of risk, you know? That's
right,
yeah.
Right.
Where did that come from?
I won't say that I could pinpoint it, but I know that there are times in our lives where things happen. Like I would call them emotional anchors where I cannot shake that experience. I remember for you that happened when your father passed.
Yeah.
Right. For me, I believe things changed when my parents divorced. I was 14. I grew up in Calgary, Alberta.
Okay.
I was 14 at the time, and in Calgary you have middle school, so 7, 8, and 9.
Yep.
And then you go to high school.
Right.
And it was grade 9. I'm rolling with the same crew from kindergarten. Right. Like we are now the kings of the castle.
Right.
In middle school.
Yeah.
Right? I was dating the hottest girl, Michelle Dickey. I still remember her
name.
All
right, name. I gotta Google Michelle Dickey.
Yeah. She was something special.
Okay.
And, I was.
You're the man.
I was quarterback on the football team.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, man, this
yeah.
grade 9 is gonna be awesome.
Right.
And I come home, listen. I'm leaving. I mean, there were issues happening in the house, and I'm like, you know. Well, I mean, we just fight too much. I don't want you guys to be sort of, I have to deal with this. I don't want to deal with this. Long story short, I'm like, okay, cool, Dad. I was having such a great time at school.
Right.
That as much as this was so serious and I was outside of the house.
Right.
And what was not expected was what my mom did next. My mom's like, great, we're moving to Pakistan. I was like, what? She's like, yeah, no, like, I mean, I don't want to be here. And I'm not well enough to work. My mom worked at a bank.
Right.
She was a teller at a bank for many,
yeah.
many years. So I'm like, okay, great. Have fun. I'm not going. I'm not. Why would I go to Pakistan?
Wow. So the whole.
Yeah. So me, I have a kid sister. She was only 5 at the time. She had no clue what was
yeah.
going on. So literally, 1.5 months into grade 9, where I'm peaking
yeah.
as like this, just in this incredible time in my life. We pack up and go to Pakistan. So obviously, I mean, I probably didn't realize how much of an emotional. Well, I mean, first of all, I'm like, why are we going to Pakistan? Like, what's there? So my grandma and my mom's brother lived out there. Yeah. And they're pretty well off. And my mom, I realize now, she needed a support system, right?
Yeah.
She probably had a breakdown, which I was not aware of at the time.
Right.
She was holding it together so well. Here was the irony in going to. So the city was Karachi. That's mm-hmm. where we went. Here was the irony: is I thought that I'm gonna go to this third world country,
right?
And I'm gonna be the coolest kid in class. I'm gonna be the smartest kid in class.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the most popular kid in class because that's what I am here.
Right.
Right. Didn't happen. I was grade 9 over there. So for those that don't know, in those emerging countries,
yeah.
The school system is the British system. And the British system is very different than here. Basically, here, it's not till grade 11 till you split sciences up, like physics,
yeah.
chemistry, and stuff. There, it starts in grade 9.
Mm-hmm.
They made me write. It was a private school. They made me write an entrance exam for English and math.
Yeah.
I failed both.
Right.
And they were like, he's going to have to repeat grade 8 again. I'm like, Mom, book my ticket
yeah.
right now to go back to Calgary. I'm
right.
not staying here and repeating grade 8.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. This is... You know, she's like, no, we're staying here. I'm going to get you into school. And you're going to have to get tutors or whatever you
right.
have to, right?
Bring you up, yeah.
Exactly. So this is how my schedule went. I went to school, studied 8 subjects from their school starts at like 7:30.
Right.
And it finishes at 12:30. So I'm like, oh, wow, this is great.
Yeah.
Man, classes are only like 40 minutes long.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. You've,
it's intense.
It's so intense. And their teachers, they hit you. Like, if you're, they'll hit you with, like, the ruler,
yeah.
the eraser. I had so
yeah.
many erasers thrown at me for answering the question incorrectly. I was
right.
like, this is not cool, man. Like,
yeah.
what? This is not how things work. And my mom's like, this is
a culture shock. Right?
Very,
yeah.
very big culture shock. And the worst part was, I was the opposite. I went from being this super cool kid in Calgary
yeah.
to being, oh, that's the dumb kid. Who's going to now help him study for math?
Right.
It was a total...
Yeah.
Like
so from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the
pretty
ocean.
Much and yeah. then it's Pakistan.
Yeah.
Like there's people like riding donkeys on the roads there. Like
right.
I mean it was very different. Man.
Yeah.
And total denial, I'm not from here.
Right.
This is just a short-term thing. Long story short, I had to get tutors. So I'm 14.
Right.
I had to get tutors for chemistry, math, physics, and then just do my regular work
yeah.
in biology.
Right.
So I studied basically from 7:30 in the morning, and then I went home, I had lunch, and then I had tutors till 5 o'clock in the evening.
Wow.
Then I'd eat dinner, and then I'd do my homework
mm-hmm.
that I got from school.
Yeah.
So it was a boot camp, academically speaking.
Yeah.
So I had no life. All I did was study.
Right.
And I passed grade 9 with a 51% average.
Wow.
And that shocked the entire school because the
yeah.
entire school thought I was going to
fail.
Like,
sure,
word
yeah.
got out. There's this loser here from
yeah,
Canada who, like, can't
slow,
even do math.
Talk slow.
Yeah, you know.
yeah.
You know, and but the thing was, I had a couple of things going for me is because I spoke, like, English, like, really, really well.
Right, of course.
Right? And
yeah.
everyone there spoke English, too. They
right.
just didn't speak it like I did.
Yeah.
And back then, I remember, you know, MTV. This is 93.
Yeah.
So MTV and, like, you know, everyone was really into, like, rap and hip-hop.
Right.
And I grew up on that, right? So I knew all that stuff inside
yeah.
out. So I'd have all the updates on the latest music.
Yeah.
So I kind of broke through
right,
where they're
right.
like, okay, this guy's
yeah.
good for music. Like,
yeah.
that's
right.
What's the cool song to listen
yeah,
to right
exactly.
now? You know, Mr.
Yeah.
Canada? I'm like, it's this one. But what ended up happening in that situation is I guess I just had to dig deep.
Right.
And I didn't realize it. So I formed discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I had tutors telling me when I was 14 when I'd be studying for finals.
Yeah.
Okay, Nomi, it's... I remember Mr. Akbar, he was my biology tutor.
Mm-hmm.
I'd finish his tutoring class at 9 p.m. And he'd be like, okay, when does school start tomorrow? I go, 7:30. And I usually get up for 6.
Yeah.
He goes, great. You've got 8 hours between now and then to study for the final.
Yeah, so no sleep.
I'm like, so when do I sleep? He goes, when the finals are done, man. Like,
right.
Like, what's wrong with you? Like, everybody's...
Yeah.
Academics in that country...
It's paramount.
Is everything.
Right.
It still is till this day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of...
That determines what kind of career you're going to have. And
it does for people who grow up there and potentially are seeking jobs there.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what I did. I go to bed at, like, 11, and I'd set the alarm for 2 o'clock.
Right.
And I'd wake up and study, and I would just pray to God. I'm like, God, just let me pass this exam.
Exactly.
I don't want to fail. I don't want to be a failure. Yeah. I don't want to be a failure. I don't want to let my mom down.
Right.
I don't want, because she's spending all this money on tutors. I don't want to let my grandma down.
Mm-hmm.
So I passed with a 51, and it became like the talk of the class.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he passed. Oh, my God. Like a standing ovation. Like, you know, I think it was the first time in the history of probably that school where someone getting 51% was getting
like
a standing ovation. Well, yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then my mom decided we're going to move back.
So just after 1 year.
Just after 1 year, I guess she got it together, and she sort of felt stronger, and you know she. But we didn't move back to Calgary. We went to Toronto. She had a sister that lived out there, and what happened to me was when I got back to Toronto, I realized how disciplined I became at studying, and that I became for me it was like, okay, you know what, I'm gonna apply the same thing here, and I'm not gonna get 51. I'm gonna get like 61, whatever it was.
Right.
Grade 10, first month back, I had 7 subjects. All 7 told the vice principal to get me into grade 11.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, the kid's not, the kid's getting 95 and everything. I don't think he's in science, right? Because when I started telling them, like, I've done physics and chemistry and biology. They're like, where did you go to school? And I'm like, oh, Pakistan. And same thing. They're like, Pakistan? And I'm like, okay. So I think what it just basically did is it just ingrained discipline in me. And I tackled a lot of fear. And then when I came back, again, I'm a hero again, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm back on the football team.
Right.
I'm around people that I can relate to. And for the first time, I was a bit of a considered a nerd.
Right.
So do you understand what happened? Super cool.
Yeah.
I went, became the loser dunce. And now I come back and I'm the teacher's assistant in 4 different classes.
Right.
Like, and I didn't want that.
Yeah.
Right? Because I was like, oh, I don't want to be that guy. Right. But like, because I was friends with so many guys on the football team, they'd literally come up to me like, dude, you gotta help me pass this exam.
Yeah.
Just give me the answers. I'm like, okay. You're gonna pass the ball to me on the field, right? It was one of those things, right? Where it just, and of course my mom coming back, she's a single mother now.
Yeah.
I got a kid sister.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this intense need to want to succeed
without
having a male role model in the house.
You think you took that role?
In a way, because I didn't want to see my mom. I didn't want to spend any extra money.
Right.
This took my mom so long to find a job. And then when she got a job, I felt guilty about asking my mom for like a dollar to go to the store and get something. Right. But she made me do other things. She's like, well, you're going to do all the chores in the house. You're going to dust the house. You're going to do the laundry.
Mm-hmm.
I was a very domesticated 15-year-old.
Right.
You know, I could do any job that, you know, was required around the house. And she'd give me $10 at the end of every week. I would just take that $10 and put it into my drawer.
Right.
And said, I'm going to save up money because I want to go visit my friends in Calgary.
Yeah.
Because I want to go back to Calgary. I want to see my friends. And she's like, okay, right, I don't have money to pay for that. So you're going to have to save up. So I saved up $300, got on a plane. I went and saw them. Like, I started learning at a young age, basically become an adult. Like, I think you probably went through the same thing once your father passed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You sort of, without people telling you, you're sort of like, okay, I gotta do this, right? This is who else is gonna do it, sort of thing. So
you become independent, right?
Exactly. So I was not scared to take on like challenges, especially if it had to do with making a buck.
Right.
Because we just didn't to do certain things. Not that I could care, right? But it's like if I saw guys at school wearing brand new like Nike tracksuits,
yeah.
Like, oh man, that looks so dope. I want one of those, right? And I'm like, how much was that tracksuit for? Oh, it was like $200, bro. I'm like, oh my God, how much is $200? My mom would laugh me out the door. I didn't even have the courage to ask her.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, I know how much my mom makes.
Right.
Right. And that was sort of the I think it set the tone for if I want things, I gotta go get it.
Right. So you learned that from a very young age.
I did. So it wasn't for me. It wasn't like, oh, I wasn't really big on wanting things. I just knew how if I did want to get something, I'd have to do it myself.
Right.
So my, you know, I moved out to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Eventually, when I hit 18, because my mom was not. I started being a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom. I come from a very conservative. Mom didn't like girls calling the house.
Yeah.
Why is this girl calling the house?
Right.
Because she thinks I'm hot. I don't know what to tell you, mom. Right. And you know, my mom's very religious. She's no, none of that.
Right.
If you have a South Asian background, you might be able to relate to that, right? Where it's just very like okay to have friends at school, but don't bring any of that home.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of thing. So, I started rebelling, mm-hmm. right? And my mom's like, "I'm sending you to go live with your dad," and I'm like, "Cool, like, let me go be with my dad. I don't even know. I haven't been around my dad for years, right?"
Yeah.
So I was in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So I just picked up the phone and I'm like, "Dad, I want to move to Vancouver. I want to live with you." And he's like, "Sure, come on down."
Right.
Right. So that started that journey, and I came to Vancouver in 96.
Right.
And in 96, I just basically told my dad, you know, this is sort of, you know, I don't. He said, "What are you going to do? It's time. You got to go to university. You got to study.
Yeah.
What do you want to study and do?" And I'm like, "I don't know if I want to go to university and study. Like, I don't like school."
Right.
"I can do it, but I don't like it."
Right.
What was going against me was everybody in my family was studying to become a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think in our family, if you study to become a lawyer, they'd be like, "Why?
Yeah, they think you're like a second class citizen."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, go to school and like become something like professional, right?
Yeah.
So when I told my dad, I was just like, "I don't want to do that." My dad just was like, "What do you want to do?" I'm like, "Well, you know, I like creative stuff. You know, I want to go to like, you know, if I want to go to like an art school." So I ended up enrolling at the new media program at Vancouver Film School.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I want to do everything content related. I want to write. I want to produce content. I want to do all that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. This was 98. So I had a choice to go to the traditional film campus to make movies.
Right.
Or go to who were like, "We can do everything on a computer."
Right.
Right. And it was so new at the time that everybody latched a movie on a video camera that looks like terrible.
Yeah.
It's like cable television.
Right.
Like, you want to go on that campus, Nomi?
Yeah.
I didn't have a choice in the matter because my father, when he went and took me to the school, asked the counselor, "Which program is going to him get a job?"
Yeah.
That's what I want to know, because this is really expensive, this school, right?
Yeah.
And this counselor's like, "Oh, he's not going to get a job if he graduates from film school. He's going to get a job if he graduates from this campus here, because they're going to teach him how to code websites." Even before he could finish, my dad's like, "Sign him up right now."
Right.
When does the class start? He's like, "In 2 weeks, great, done. Give me the paperwork,"
right?
But even in that scenario, my dad made me take a student loan.
Right.
Like, I didn't, I had to,
if I wanted it.
Exactly. I mean, he paid for a little bit, right? But yeah, I mean, I went to school for arts,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and during that time, I sort of like, you know, I kind of liked the program.
Yeah.
I kind of didn't.
So what was the change in direction? So your intention was to do arts.
Yes.
But then you heavily got into business, and now obviously is
an it's everybody.
Well, where was that like? Where was that like? Where was that turn in the road? Yeah.
Yeah. I finished the school program. Started working on sets right away.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has any experience, or anybody who has a friend in the film industry, they'll tell you that in the beginning you have to work really long hours for free.
Right.
It's called deferred work. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a nice little letter from the director at the end of the project saying,
yeah.
"This person was incredible,"
right.
"and I highly recommend, you know, and then you log a certain amount of hours to
mm-hmm.
get to join the union and things like that.
Right.
So I started doing that, and when my dad came to know that I wasn't looking for a real job, he's like, "So this is what you're gonna do with your life? You're gonna work on set for free and hope to get a job one
day?"
Because he'd see me at home a lot. He's like, "Why aren't you at work?" "Oh, there's no work today." "Oh, so what are you doing?"
Right.
"Sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring." He's like, he's like, "This is ridiculous." He goes,
mm-hmm.
I thought you were supposed to get a job, but I secretly didn't want to tell my dad, "Dad, I'm not getting a job as a website coder. I don't want to do that."
Right.
But that's what they were paying literally back then. If you know how to code HTML and JavaScript, $80,000 job out the gate.
Wow.
Out the gate, right?
Yeah,
and that's my dad. That's great.
Exactly.
Like, oh, my son's going to be making $100,000,
right?
I didn't want to do that. I wasn't very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I didn't, that portion of the program, I didn't pay attention to.
Yeah.
You know, long story short, I did learn it enough where I was so broke. Mm-hmm. I ended up coding a website, a very basic one, for someone who became my first mentor mm-hmm. in real estate. And he's the gentleman that said, because he was in real estate, he wanted a website for his company.
Right.
It was a terrible website. I mean, he didn't know any different. We're talking about 1999, where there was things, the internet was so new, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, even using Google, people are like, what's Google?
Yeah.
Right? That's the era I'm from, right? I'm 41, I'm 41 this year, so just to put that out there. Right. And the guy says to me, I charged him $2,500 for 3 days of work in 1999.
Yeah.
And he was so impressed. Like, he told me not to meet him at his office. He said, oh, I'm at home. Come get your check from here. Now, I had no idea in 1999 what Southwest Marine Drive was.
Yeah.
I was like, there was no GPS. I was like, how do I get there? He's like, just come down, you know, Granville and, you know, take a right here and that. Yeah. So I'm like, I get to the gate. Mm-hmm. I'm like, so I'm going to do the whole buzz, the gate.
Right.
Gates open. It's like straight out of a movie, right? He's got a windy road.
Yeah, that enters goes in. To so his... Southlands is an area of Vancouver that has these large, like, equestrian estates. So, like, for horses and stuff like that. So, yeah, so a lot of the houses are on big plots of land there. Yeah.
They are. So he had a Bentley parked outside his bike, and I didn't know it was a Bentley. I'm not into cars, but I just looked fancy.
Right.
So, well, the reason I knew it was a Bentley because when I walked into his house, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is, you have such an incredible mm-hmm. house, Mr. So-and-so. He's like, yeah, great. He was just more interested in going, man, this is 3 days of work. I'm giving you $2,500. But he was really amazed that I made a website, right? Like, I'm showing him, you know, here you are. You're on the internet. So he was kind of like, I guess I was kind of selling at that point. he was like, okay, good. You're a smart kid, man. Where'd you go to school?
Yeah.
And when I told him I went to school for film, he's like, what? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, actually, I'm only doing this to pay some bills, but I'm actually pursuing a career in writing and directing.
Right.
And making content. And he's like, oh, so you're broke, right? Because you're two people that were trying to do the same. Long story short, man, he goes, take this check and go and cash it at the Bank of Montreal on the corner of Willow and Broadway and ask for this manager, right? And he goes, you're a smart kid. You should really, if film is what you're doing, you know, you can make money in real estate doing nothing. Like, it's passive. You don't have to give it your full time. Because I was like, how did you get all this? Yeah. Because I come from a family of real estate people, right?
Right.
And that's when he told me, you see that car outside? I've only driven, he goes, my first car when I was 18 was a Bentley.
Wow.
I've only driven. He's from wealth. And and he goes, you know, my dad got me that car and I've only driven that kind of car since. Mm-hmm. He goes, he told a joke to me. He goes, yeah, I went and got a Ferrari for like 3 days. And I'm like, this is really tough to drive this car. I gotta shift the gear. And I gotta, I gave the car back. And I'm like, wow, this guy is like, I don't know anybody like this guy.
Right.
So I go to the Bank of Montreal, Willow and Broadway. I ask for the manager who's supposed to introduce me to a mortgage. Now, it's so funny saying this now, because that's the first thing I tell clients. You gotta talk to my mortgage specialist.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you know so-and-so. She saw the check, right? You know, so how do you know this? Oh, I did some work for him. Oh, wow, you must have done this. I look like a kid, right?
She's
like, oh, $2,500. She's talking me up, and I'm like, how do you know so-and-so? Oh, the Bank of Montreal leases this building from him.
Right.
In fact, his family owns the whole block. And I'm like, the mystery of this man just got to be more and more, and I felt like, is this like a sign? Like, how did, like, this is crazy.
Yeah. You know? Random.
So he basically pointed and said, you can pick up pre-sales. This is, you know, the guy to talk to.
Right.
And I remember calling him and saying, you know, thank you so much. And how do I prepay you? Like, how do I, like, I don't even know what I'm doing. And he just simply said, just talk to the guy at the bank. I'm busy. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Right. That was it. I never saw him again. Never talked to him again. Right. I was too scared to call him. Right. Yeah. I was just thinking he's supposed to be somebody important.
Right.
And that was it, man. I flipped my first pre-sale, and I said, you know what? I can come back to film anytime.
Right.
I'm going to go out and make some money right now.
Right.
So I don't know if that sort of explains how I kind of pivoted, because I never was about money, and the money never really drove me.
Right.
I was the kid in film school that would charge $1.49 Whopper on my credit card.
Yeah.
I was so broke.
Right.
And I didn't care, right? I'm like, oh, my credit card is maxed out. Like, how much does it? $10? Yeah, I'll put a $10 payment on my credit card.
Yeah.
everything changes when you see money. So I've met all kinds of people, and it's always two trajectories. There are some people, when they see money, they feel they need to spend it.
Right.
They need to, oh, I got money now. I need to get clothes. I need to get a car. I need to do. And then there's the other, which I believe I am, which is, I'm going to make this into more.
Right.
Or I'm going to save some.
Yeah, you're planted somewhere.
Exactly, right?
Because make it grow.
Yeah, because I was never attracted to cars and all that. So I was like, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I got money, let me. So I just took that path. And it was actually really interesting because I realized until I get money, how am I going to be able to do more of these sort of take advantage of these opportunities?
Sure.
Even though at the time you didn't have to put any money down. So, but it just felt good knowing that, oh, I got this money in the account. So, you know, that was the first time I saw $30,000 in one shot.
Yeah.
For, like, I felt it really did nothing.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, I should be buying three of these things at one time. Why am I just doing one? So, I've met a couple of other friends and I'm like, dude, we need to go to the sales center. Just go find, we need to go to sales centers and we need to figure out how many of these things we can do. And my friends thought I was nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like, I was like, dude, check this check out, man. I showed them my slip.
Right.
They're like, where'd you get all that money from? I'm like, they're like, you're rich. Let's go for like lunch or something. I'm like, no, I'm the kind of guy that didn't like to see a number. Like, I didn't want to see my balance go below a sort of number.
Yeah.
And no one taught it to me. I was just kind of like, why?
So it was a bit innate.
It's just in there, man, right? So eventually, after a few years, I started saying, okay, you know what? I should get a car.
Right.
But to me, that car was like an old, beat-up, like, Ford Taurus.
Right.
Like, to me, it was like I needed it to get groceries. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was very minimal overhead.
Yeah.
And that sort of just played out into my life, where fast forward to me telling you when my dad approached me, and he's like, we should, you know, build on these lots. He couldn't have done that if I didn't show him the money I saved up.
Right.
He's like, wow, you, like, saved up a lot of money, you know.
Yeah.
Thank God you didn't go into this stupid film business.
Right.
So for him, it was, like, a relief, right?
Yeah.
So I realized, okay, I can go back to that because that's in me, right? I can go back to that anytime. And I haven't looked back since.
Do you ever incorporate any of the things you learned from that creative, like, endeavor into your business now? Because I do get a lot of compliments. So Nomi has a very interesting marketing campaign and his website. It's Ask Nomi.
It is.
And it's a very like it's very very well done. It's very bold, and I actually hear a lot of compliments on it about how much attention it can get, you know, in terms of the look aesthetically, but also like the messaging and how it kind of plays out. So do you think that you can attribute a lot of that to your to the art school stuff, or do you think
I've always been again, this is something innate. This is from even just being a kid.
Right.
If I had a friend coming over to the house, my room had to look perfect.
Oh, okay.
My it didn't matter what brand my clothes were, they had to be ironed.
Right.
I was a planner. Like, I'd know what to give my friend for lunch.
Okay.
I'd know what movie we were going to go watch. Like, everything had to be presented in a very orderly manner. So if I can't, that just kind of went everywhere with me. I think it still does till this day. Right?
Do you think your business is like that too?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm very anal when it comes to, like, my assistant Ben, if he doesn't have his shirt tucked in. Like, Ben, tuck your shirt in. Right? I almost sound like his dad. Right?
That's
pretty hard. I'm like, well, I mean, if we're going to meet a client,
right,
or if he's going to do a showing,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Because there's so much, everybody's different, right?
Yeah.
No one has to do
that. Yeah, especially in Vancouver, there's like a very relaxed, you know, surfer vibe, skateboard vibe, yoga vibe.
Right.
And so, like, we tend to be a little bit lackadaisical sometimes, but I guess that, like,
yeah, you don't need to wear a tie every time. I mean, but whatever you're doing, it just should be
well.
That's how I, not just well, it's just, so some people are, they care about presentation, some people don't. For me, creatively speaking, I mean, my creative side's always there, but there's only so much of that you can spend. See, creativity, you have to spend a lot of time. Like, if you're a creative person, and anybody who knows this, if you write or if you design, it doesn't happen in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And in this line of work, it's like you have to make quick decisions and, like, okay, great, like, I don't want to spend more time on this than I need to, because at the end of the day, this is not what sells the property, even though I see realtors spending thousands of dollars on videos.
Yeah.
Do you do videos?
I just started to do videos. I think that it just depends on the plan, the marketing plan for the individual business person. And some people, you know, embrace the use of videos. And I think, it just depends on the, I do them. I was doing them very, I am doing them, I just started, though.
Good.
Just started, yeah.
Right, so in other words, though, I mean, for the first probably portion of your career, you probably weren't that focused on maybe doing the videos. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I was in the beginning.
Mm.
I would drive the videographer nuts. I'm like, okay, can you please do this? Can you please do that? And they would accommodate because I'd be paying them for it. And then guess what would happen? Other than my client, nobody's watching them.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you're a realtor, you know how many people are viewing your videos on YouTube or whatever. And I'm like, what, 12 people saw the video?
Yeah.
Like, and this is like, why am I spending more time on this than I need to?
So, yeah, you allocated time appropriately.
You have to make decisions.
Yeah.
Right? You taught me that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you learn where to spend your time, what activity is going to produce the best return on your time. And even though I have a love for the visuals and presentation, I ended up spending more time honing my presentation at open houses than on anything else. And I'll get into that in terms of, you know, everybody listening, if there's anything I want them to take from this, it's not my journey. It's it's like you can actually learn. Oh, okay, great. I spent an hour listening to this guy talk about his life. But can you give me something? Like what helped change your business? That's where I realized the. So if you meet me at a listing presentation, it'll be tough to sort of beat me at a listing presentation in terms of presentation.
Right.
You taught me sort of it's a combination of, well, you know, the presentation is one thing, Nomi, but you got to win the trust of a person in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for some of us that happens organically.
Okay.
People like you. You walk in. Like, people do business with people they like.
Right.
Right?
That is a huge key.
Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's like if you're presentable, as soon as the door opens, right? Because I'm guilty of this. My advertising right now, I'm clean shaven and short hair.
Right.
So that's what most people see when they see me in the elevators or they see me on the flyer.
Right.
And then they open the door and this, you know, this hippie shows up in a suit, right? But like, it's everything's presentation.
Right.
And I think people, I don't think I know. Come on, man. As soon as someone walks in a room, if you don't know them, you're deciding instantly whether you want to talk to them. Straight up.
I think the first impression is huge. I think for the first, you know, they say, I think in the first 10 or 15 seconds, you're going to know if you're going to do business or be friends or, you know, potentially date or anything like that. It's like in the first 10 or 15 seconds, you get that first opportunity. So
yeah. And that's the first moment I met you, the impression that you left with me was, I want to hug that guy. He's such a sweet, trustworthy.
Like, and once you gain weight.
Wow. I mean, but the bottom line is like you exude an energy that is very low key and very unassuming, right? I'd never heard about you. I'd never heard your name till I met you here at the office, right? And usually, you know, everybody has seen people's signs and they're like, oh, that person must be a famous, pretty busy realtor. I'm like, Michael, you have never heard of this guy before. No. And then you see his numbers and you're like, wow, man, this guy's doing a lot of business and consistently, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, this guy's incredibly humble. Like, you're the opposite of what... Look, I'm not saying every realtor that does 100-plus deals a year is an arrogant person. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, they're not that accommodating with their time if you want to pick their brain.
Right.
And that's the bottom
traditionally,
line.
Traditionally. Yeah. Hopefully we can change that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I've met more, and it's interesting because once you as a person start exuding that same sort of energy where you want to help people, you end up meeting more people like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Right, so I've met more and more people who put up really, really healthy numbers year after year who are like, sure, man, what do you want to know?
Yeah.
Like, what do you know? Like, Michael's really blunt about it. Take everything. Take all my secrets. There are no secrets. Like, here, take my listing presentation, Nomi.
Yeah.
You know, here, just take this. Use it. What do you want to know, right? So I was not used to that, but what that ended up doing for me is it just made me that much better at presenting myself. So, yeah, my listing presentation, I would say, is every time I finish it, most people are like, wow. Well, they're not expecting you to be that prepared. You seem to know what you're talking about. But there's a lot of psychology behind it. Because I paid a company to create a presentation for me. I put the bones together, like I did the skeleton. I'm like, okay, now make this really polished, and I want to tell a story. Right? And that company actually said, well, usually we just work with developers. We don't work with realtors. Yeah. So, great, this is what the bill's going to be for this. And I'm like, great, let's do it. And, you know, it paid for itself in the first presentation afterwards, right? So, yeah, presentation has always been a part of what I like doing. And I think, in a sense, that's what helped me creatively.
Sure.
I don't know if that answers that question.
Well, I think they go hand in hand, you know, having that, you know, knowing yourself and knowing what you feel comfortable with and using like authentically what you know would appeal to yourself if you were this like I always like to put myself in people's shoes, and that's like a fun part of you know what I get to do. And I put myself when I sit down with Nomi or I sit down with any other agent or I sit down with a buyer seller or a developer, I always first thing I do is I sit there and I'm like, okay, what are they thinking? What is going through their mind? And what would I like to hear? What would I like to see if I was in their exact position? And I like to do that a lot, actually. You know, whether it's even if I'm getting like lined up at a Starbucks and I'm about to be the next person in line, like what would that teller like to, or what would the barista like to see out of their customer? So I think I'm pretty, you know, there's some things from that perspective, and you just obviously got to know yourself there. So, Nomi, I wanted to ask, you know, talking about like process, talking about some of the, like, let's say we were to make three keys for your business, because Nomi's actually, like he was saying, he didn't start out being an unabashed success. You know, we've had a lot of people on that were realtors that started out, they sold like 30 houses, 40 houses, like instantly. And Nomi, obviously in his story, he had a couple of years that were lean, a year that was decent, and then it started really ramping up with a great trajectory for his business. So, you know, want to hear, you know, because you have a unique story, like what would be the three keys to your business that that you specifically think that have helped you the most?
The keys.
Yeah, the keys to the keys. Castle.
Secure the bag.
Yeah.
I learned three things that changed my business, I believe, which were... So here's the thing, anybody listening, which is you're only going to know what works when you track it. If you are not tracking your activity... It's, you know, you can hear a lot of people. This was the toughest thing for me to hear from people. You were one of the first that were the opposite. I'd sit down with a realtor killing it. What are you doing? I just get up and do what I do, man. I just go out there and, you know, I'm like, okay, great, man. I didn't learn anything from that, right?
Right.
You know, you got to do the open houses. Yeah, but what are you doing at the open houses? Oh, I don't know, man. I'm just talking to people, right? Oh, okay. You gotta call people. Okay, and what are you saying to them? Nobody could really share with me how I honestly believe, and I've met even every year at the beginning of the year, I will take meetings with new realtors that are doing amazing. These are realtors that do 100 deals a year, don't have a listing presentation.
Yeah, exactly.
These are realtors that when I ask them, okay, this verbatim, it's the first question out the gate because they're just excited sort of meet me and pick my brain too, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, great. Tell me what a day looks like of prospecting for you. 9 out of 10 times? I don't know, man. I just, I don't think I prospect. I'm like, what are you talking about? No, I don't have like, what do you mean? No, I mean, like, I wake up and I block time and I do all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, no, I don't do that. Well, where the heck are you getting all your business from? I don't know, you know, I just go for coffees and I, you know, I'm great, right? And it's just, it was very wishy-washy. So I would literally take a pen and pad to those meetings and I'd be doodling.
Yeah.
Like the word waste of time on a piece of paper. I was very happy for the realtor because I genuinely, like, I mean, you know, we either did a deal together or somehow know each other, and I'm very happy for their success. But again, like out in the valley, Mike Marafori, and if nobody knows that name, it's probably because you haven't driven through Surrey.
Yeah.
The man's put his face everywhere, right? You know, I meet people every day. They're like, oh, yeah, the guy that's on, like, all the bus shelters.
Good-looking guy.
Very, very handsome, very approachable-looking, and a close friend of mine. We started at the same time. And I sit down with Mike all the time. I'm like, Mike, and I have a friendship with him. Give me all your secrets. Straight up, I don't want to hear the BS, man. And he'll laugh every time.
Yeah,
and he'll be like, "Swear to God, not. There's no secret. I'm like, okay, listen, Mike, you did 200 ends last year. That's ridiculous.
Right.
How are you doing that? I don't know, man. I just put my face everywhere and hairs out, and I don't prospect. This is coming from the number one realtor in the Fraser Valley. Yeah. Number one realtor. And I'm like, it's so frustrating. Right? I'm like, Mike's like, man, let's stop talking about this. Let's go drive my Ferrari. I'm like, okay, right? I'm like, great. So if there's three things I can share with people, it all came from Mike. These three things changed. I'm serious, man. Like, okay. I mean, so Michael, I take meetings with him usually once a year. We talk about where my business came from the year before. Mm-hmm. And then the beauty about Mike is Mike doesn't care what, you know, how much you made or what you did. Mike only looks like, don't do this because this is obviously not making you any money, and do these activities and just double down, like do more of it.
No, right,
because this is where there's no sugarcoating, there's no hey, you know what, just go out and you're like that. Mm-hmm. But like when you deal with me, I don't know, maybe you're different with other people. Mm-hmm. That brings out a different energy. When I deal with Mike, is very cut and dry. Mike's like, okay, that's not working. Great. No, we don't do that. Mm-hmm. Do the stuff that's free.
Yeah.
Do the stuff that doesn't cost money. So the first thing he said is, you know, are you doing open houses? Because that's free business. And everybody listening probably has heard this, but I'm going to tell, I'll put money. You know what? I'll buy someone lunch right now listening who actually knows how to run an open house properly. Mm-hmm. From Michael taught me, he goes, Nomi, I actually sit down and I know what time I'm putting my signs out at. I know what time I'm ready in the open house by. And I know exactly what I'm doing for those 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm not standing there kind of just saying, hey, I'm doing this for my seller. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, great. I'm going to shadow you at an open house. Which I did, and I remember it was in Richmond. It was a crappy little two-bedroom.
two-bedroom. My kind of stuff.
Yeah. We call him Michael U Specials, a $500,000 two-bedroom, two baths, and he does like 100 of them every year. And so I'm like really excited, right? Like I'm suited and booted, and I think my duty that entire day was just you know, somebody would call you on your phone and you'd be like, yeah, Nomi, can you go downstairs and open the door? And I'm like, gladly. I'm learning from the master, right? So what I watched Michael do was very simple. I couldn't believe it. I was standing in the room, and anytime someone would walk in, Michael wasn't even standing. He was perched on the couch, the side arm of the couch. He had one leg on that and one leg down. He was just like, hey, welcome. You know, my name's Michael. Can you sign in for me? And, you know, come on in. And I don't know what it is about him. I guess people are like, okay, great. I'll sign in. I'll give you all my information. Here's my name and my number. And what blew me away was, in my mind, I thought everything had to be very professional. I'm not saying you're not professional, but I realized your strategy. Michael would literally try and make everybody laugh that was in the open house. I remember this, like it was yesterday. One lady was like, oh, do you mind if I take some pictures? And Michael stood up and buttoned his jacket, and he's like, where do you want me to stand? And he's like, do you want me to stand this way or that way? And the lady got confused. She was like, what are you talking about? But everybody else in the room started laughing.
Yeah.
You basically were breaking the ice, and you're making it less awkward for everybody.
Right.
But for me, that's not me naturally.
Yeah.
I don't like to be somebody I'm not. Mm-hmm. But what I took away from that was, people were giving you their contact info, and what you basically leaned in and told me, Nomi, I'm not here to sell the property. That's going to happen, right? I mean, if somebody walks in and wants to write an offer, great. I'm here to meet the neighbors. You were prospecting at an open house for listings.
Yeah.
How many people listening do that, right?
Right.
There are very few, Michael, because people are like, what do you mean? You're not, because I'll take open houses. Other people, I'll have five of my own listings, and I'll take someone open house strategically.
Right.
I just hit the market. It's only like, you know, in this market now, 500,000-600,000 is, you know, easy to meet a lot of people.
Right.
And they're like, oh, you want to take my open house? I'm like, yeah. They're like, okay, you're trying to pick up some buyers? I'm like, no. I'm trying to meet sellers, right? And they're like, what are you talking about? You're trying to meet sellers. So Michael basically told me, get people to sign in. And when they sign in, try and meet the neighbors and kind of just keep a track of which neighbor came over. Because what ends up happening, right? Because you're asking me this. What ends up happening? I'm like, I don't know. The neighbor just probably says their place is better than this.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, exactly. You want to ask the neighbor. Hey, what you told me is you said to me, I'm going to ask every neighbor who signed in, hey, do you want to know how much this place ends up selling for?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever remember telling me that. That's what you told me. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they're like, of course. Everybody wants to know. And you're like, this is how I'm going to set the appointment. Simple. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick up the phone and say, hey, you came by the open house. And, you know, we ended up getting this many offers. That was the time. It was like multiple offers. And it ended up selling for this much. And I know you came by. Were you curious or interested to know how much your place is worth?
Right.
Right? And that would open up a conversation. Oh, well, my place has this and that. And you're like, oh, great. You know, so that leads into asking the right questions. So rule number one or key number one was how to actually use the 2 hours of the open house.
Right.
Very systematically. That changed my business forever. Something that simple. I took that model and I applied it. I ended up getting one really sweet listing on Marinaside Crescent, which was a $2 million three-bedroom townhouse. And I had 100 people come through the open house, that first open house. So I got a lot of the neighbors came through in that first weekend. I'm a student, so I took your formula and I just put it on steroids. Like, I'm looking, Michael does it really laughy, this kind of way. I'm going to just come at people with a ton of information about the compound, about the complex. But I was more so just trying to get to know the person.
Yeah.
I'd ask very simple questions that I've never seen most realtors ask at opens. Here's what does everybody say at the open? Welcome to the open house.
Right.
If you have any questions, let me know. No one's going to ask you any questions.
Right.
That's what the feature sheet is for. By the way, I purposely keep my feature sheet hidden.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the feature sheet? Oh, what do you want to know?
Right.
I want to talk to the person.
Yeah.
I'm the feature sheet.
Right.
I know everything about this place. You're not even going to know what to look for, right?
Right.
Oh, how much is the strata fee? As soon as someone starts talking, I'm like, great. What brings you to the area?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, asking the right questions.
What brings you here today? Right? Why here than everywhere else? Oh, you know, my first conversation was, oh, we actually live in the tower and we're looking for a bigger place.
Perfect.
Oh, here we go, right? That conversation, Jason and Katie walked in, and here's something that I encourage everybody to do at opens. Don't wait in the lobby. If you're working condos, don't wait in the lobby.
Mm.
Wait around the corner where no one can see, where people are forced to phone your phone.
Mm.
You don't need to get them to sign in. So as soon as the phone starts ringing, I'll be like, hello, Nomi Malik speaking, right? I'm right around the corner.
Right.
Oh, yeah, hi, we're downstairs here for the open house. Okay, sorry, I didn't get your name. Oh, my name's Susan. Okay, Susan, I'll be right there. As soon as I hang up the phone, I save the number under Susan, open house, the address, and day. Done.
Yeah.
And now all I'm doing is I'm building rapport from the minute I open up the door.
Yeah.
Right? I'm remembering everything about Susan that I can, one or two key things.
Yeah.
And when Susan tells me, you know what, this is not going to work. Okay, great. Susan, I notice you're not here with a realtor.
Yeah.
Who's helping you organize your tours? Who's helping you sort of understand the area? Because, I mean, I lied. I'm like, I specialize down here.
Right.
Don't lie to people. But, you know, you want to help them, right?
Yeah, you know a lot about it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I started doing that.
Yeah.
So I started meeting a lot. I treat everybody as a Susan.
Right.
I save their number. I make some notes after they leave in my phone. There's no feature sheet. There's no sign-in sheet. My phone is a sign-in sheet. My memory is a sign-in sheet.
That's good.
I will actually remember people's names and how many children they have. Mm. That's something I just know.
Yeah.
I can't say everybody's going to
do that.
Well,
you got to know yourself.
Right? Exactly. So what do? This is the most key thing I'm going to share with you guys is after doing all these activities, Michael's like, great. Now know me after the open. I got to call these people back that signed in. Like right away.
Right, yeah.
Oh, you can wait a day if you want, that's fine, but you got to call them back, and here's how it goes. And you shared the dialogue with me, which is great. You came by the open house. What did you think? Would you be interested in writing an offer on this property? I'm like, are you serious, man? Like, yeah. You're actually just being that straightforward? He's like, yeah, because I'm just waiting to get the next question, right? Because most people are like, no, I don't. Yeah. Okay, great. You know, who's helping you look for a place? Like, are you, I remember you said, you know, I don't waste my time, people. Michael basically says, are you going to be willing to buy within the next couple of months? He's like, if they tell me no, there's no rush. Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for coming by. Bye. On to the next person, right? Again, you're choosing how to use your time. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you, Michael and the listeners, how this changed my business. How it just absolutely, I remember that listing on Arenaside Crescent, that couple that came in, there were 40 other people walking around, but all I cared about was talking to them, because that's where the rapport was, right? It was so natural. I get a phone call the same afternoon, and he's like, Jason's like, hey, would you have time after the open house? This is literally after the, would you have time to come by and take a look at our place?
Yeah.
Of course. Right?
Yeah.
And me being me, I jump in my car, I pull up their address, I pull up, like, when was the last time it was sold, just to kind of get, like, oh, it's one bedroom and den. Right, so by the time I get to the door,
you have an idea.
I have an idea. I mean, sometimes you don't have time. Sometimes it's just like, oh yeah, sure, come on in.
Right.
Because you're there to make friends.
Yeah.
You're not there to sell the house.
Right.
You're just there to get the trust.
Yeah.
Right. They ended up writing an offer on a place that very night with me. Not on that one. But they're like, we kind of like this other place.
Yeah.
Great. You guys want to write on it? They're like, sure. And that place was 1.4.
Right.
Sold their place for $1 million.
Yeah,
that was from having an open house conversation.
Yeah, these are like amazing. So
yeah,
just, you know, there's so many opportunities, and it's just, you know, other, you know, Nomi saw that as an unbelievable opportunity to meet somebody that he could connect with and that he could serve very well, and then he took the initiative and the extra steps, and he was bold in asking the questions that. That a lot of people wouldn't ask, so I think that's really, really, really cool. So that was obviously one key to be able to ask those tough questions.
What I'm underplaying here is it takes guts to make the call.
Yeah, you know, bravery is really key. That's something that we teach. Like, I teach a sales class in Oakland University, and I think if anyone has ever taken that class, like, I make everyone chant, like, be brave.
Oh, wow.
Really, I think it's, you know, that's the toughest part of sales, I think, is to ask those tough questions. And like, I had a tendency to go 99% of the way there and then not ask that tough question. Mm. And when I was able to overcome that block, things just turned around. So that's a big key for me. So what are the other two keys, Nomi?
The other two keys.
Yeah.
Key number two, marketing. Mm-hmm. Again, Michael at the time I was just asking, what is he doing? Like, how is he meeting? Like, how much of his business was referral, and then how much of it was cold? And he just shared with me that he's like, you know, there's a couple buildings I've done multiple transactions in. So I flyer these buildings when, I don't know, a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a mail campaign. And because Michael tracks everything, he's like, okay, I spent $22,000 on flyers. And I got 12 deals out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good, Nomi. That's like a good like ROI. And I'm like, oh, is it? Okay, great.
Right.
You know, in my head, all I'm hearing is $20,000. That's a lot of money, right? So going back to, so Marinaside Crescent is an area I ended up basically taking. I should buy you a special gift.
Everything that
happened was from Michael just basically saying, do these things and it'll work. So once I sold that townhouse, I, for the first time, sent out a flyer to 2,300, there were 2,300 condos on that strip. And all it said was, just sold, and Mike's like, here, take my template and just copy it. I literally took my face and plastered it on top of Mike's face, and just got my assistant to say, you know, let's make like 2,400 of these. And I got calls.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the beauty: you gotta know how to answer the call.
Yeah, that's, you gotta be able to convert them.
You gotta.
How do you convert them?
All right.
This is the secret.
Yeah, here's the secret.
This is where you dial the volume up.
Yeah, exactly. Phone to ring. Yeah, hi. Is this Nomi Malik? Yeah, it's Nomi. Hi. Yeah, I got your flyer in the mail. You just sold this unit. Yeah, great. So it says free evaluation, like no obligation. Is that means like if you come here, you absolutely there's mm-hmm. you know, I take it away from that and I'm like, can you tell me a little bit about your property?
Right.
And as soon as they start going into that, Michael basically taught me, set the appointment. Don't mm-hmm. just get off the phone. Like, just set the appointment and get off the phone. Like, the more you talk, the more they may not want to meet you, right?
Right.
Or they just want to get as much information from you because mm-hmm. they have no intention to list with you. They're just like, oh, this is the guy. He knows all the info. So I would just set the appointment. And when I'd set the appointment, I would just have my killer listing presentation mm-hmm. ready. I'd comb my hair and look spiffy. And, I would, setting the appointment's huge. And you know what? Half of those appointments don't turn into anything right mm-hmm. away. You know, okay, thanks for coming. You know, I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, appreciate your time. But even I learned how to become a very hard closer, which I was very uncomfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're meeting someone new, you don't want to offend them.
Right.
So I'm going to share three things with you guys right now when you're at the listing appointment that worked for me because the flyer alone, the flyer just got me in.
Right.
That doesn't mean I'm getting the listing.
Right.
Right. And we all know this. So if you're a by referral only realtor, you're not going to care about any of this stuff mm-hmm. because it's just something you're not used to. And we have a lot of those successful agents in our office.
Oh, yeah.
They think people like you and I are crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had conversations with them. They're like, you meet strangers? That's interesting.
Yeah.
This is how it would go. I'd finish my presentation and I'd ask, the first question I ask is, so what do you think of my marketing plan? Oh, I think it's really, really good. Great. And is there anything about what we discussed today that sort of I didn't address that could help you and your family maybe take the next step?
Right.
And they'd be like, no, you actually covered way more than great. So would there be anything that would stop us from moving forward and working together?
Mm-hmm.
And if they answer that question with, no, so I reach into my briefcase and I go, have you ever seen an MLS listing contract before? And a lot of times people get a little bit, they freeze.
Sure.
They're like, oh, what's that? I go, well, here's the thing, right? You've kind of explained to me why I'm here and how it would better your life
mm-hmm.
If you made this move. I think it's a great time to do it. The numbers make sense. You like my marketing, right? I'm getting them again.
Yeah.
These are things I didn't know how to say, Michael,
right?
Like, I mean, I just assumed, oh, I'm going to be really professional and give a great presentation and sit there with my thumbs and just be like, oh, I hope they sign this. No, it doesn't work like that. Not with strangers. Anyways, but the beauty of working with strangers is they will sign with you very quickly if they trust you.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need to be encouraged,
mm-hmm.
right? You give them every opportunity to say yes. And then if they're like, okay, you know what, Nomi, we're not really that comfortable signing anything right now, but if we do something, you're our guy.
Mm-hmm.
I would then be like, at that point, I'd be like, okay, I understand. I stopped doing that. I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do. At some point, you guys have to discuss this. I get that. What I'm going to do is we're going to go through this contract. You're going to sign it, and I'm going to leave it with you.
Mm-hmm.
And discuss it, right? I mean, just discuss it. The contract stays with you guys, right? And what ends up happening is this little, and sometimes they'll still say, no, that's okay. But there are times where like, oh, okay, sure, right? They are subliminally agreeing mm-hmm. to work with you.
Right.
It doesn't work every time, but it has. I'm not leaving the appointment. I haven't spent $4,000 sending out those flyers to not ask these questions at that one appointment, right? And I've had I've had this happen at the appointment. $2 million townhouse, they just met me, and as they're signing the bag, all right, come on. You know what? Let's just do this. Let's just. You know, I'm like, fantastic, right? I swear
that's
to God.
Great.
Oh yeah. And then it's like, and of course, I mean, they gotta sell and buy. So I'm like, great. That's the listing agreement. Here's the buyer's agreement.
Right.
They're like, oh, what's this? This, I'm gonna help you move.
Yeah.
Like for me, the most important thing is making sure
that's
we.
That's interesting
find
how you introduce it in that manner. That's really good. And you know, I think something that can boil it down. So Nomi's developed a system when he's in his appointment, a series of questions, how he does his presentation. And so in the back of his mind, even though it might not be in like an agenda form, he kind of knows what the agenda is prior to. And so he takes real good control of the situation, the clients, which is really, really huge, I think.
It is, and it's hit or miss, guys. So the only way I describe it is it's no different. And I know, you know, it's this kind of, maybe guys will understand this more than the girls, because girls
mm-hmm.
don't have to go up and ask guys almost the time. It's usually guys, right? It's
right.
Like, you know, when you're in the room and you're single and you see someone that you really like,
yeah,
And you may not have an opportunity to ask that person out again. You might not ever see this. Yeah. This is your chance, man. You spent $50 at the bar already. Like, make the most of your money. Right. And what's the worst that's going to happen? So at least you go home saying, hey, man.
At least you gave it a shot. Right?
Don't say no to me because I'm going to come back with three other questions. I mean, that's what you're doing at the appointment. People want to be helped.
Right.
That's it. And then number three is you told me when it was time to hire an assistant. Game change.
Yeah.
Game changer. Game changer only if you know what to do with your time. And I've had an assistant for, I've gone through two assistants.
Right.
And after having an assistant for 2 years, I'm still guilty of not maximizing my downtime.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, when you hire the assistant, you're going to realize how powerful that extra time is. And even if it's only spent for 1 hour just making calls,
mm-hmm.
then that's what it is.
Yeah.
Because it's not spent putting data input sheets together.
Yeah.
It's not spent creating these just sold flyers.
Right.
Like Ben, my assistant, is like, if I had to do, when Ben is never called in sick.
Yeah.
But when Ben left for holidays.
Vacation, yeah.
God, because there are times like, do I really need an assistant? Oh my God! Yeah, and then the first day, you're like, I can't do this.
I know,
this
you know, you, it, it's interesting because now for me, it's I think I've, you know, I've had a staff for, you know, we're getting, cutting in. So this will be the last point here. So we you know, I had a staff for, you know, I've had an assistant for over 10 years now, and I feel how, like, it's like a cat without claws. Like, I don't even know how to do. I don't know how to do very much of the computer work and all the other stuff anymore. But at the same time, it just frees, like Nomi was saying, it frees up your time to be able to do activities that are in your specialization that would potentially lead directly to funds. But there is a little bit of a run-up to it because you need to gain proficiency, because you need to gain competency in all aspects of the business first. And then once you have volume and you have a certain amount of sales and gross dollar volume, there's a certain point in which, essentially being proven that that's the point in which you would take an assistant on and you know, kind of change from being an independent agent to kind of running a small business, which is a little bit of a mindset shift in a sense. So I think, you know, Nomi, it was an awesome experience talking with you. I can talk to you forever, actually. You know, maybe we'll do part two one of these days, because I think there's so much more here, because I have like a list of long questions in my notepad here that I couldn't get to. But Nomi, thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Nomi, Nomi Malik is a realtor at Oakland Realty, and we're just so happy to have had him on today. So if you don't mind, feel free to like, subscribe, and share this podcast. And we'll be back again sometime soon and with some more tips with great guests like Nomi. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Awesome.